भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 83. We actually are going to do text 9 and 10, since we didn't do 9 yesterday, because we had the appearance day class of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So we'll start with, do you have 9 out there? We'll go back to 9. Right, we haven't done 9, right? Right, okay, right. Shri Satchabhama Vacha. Let's see, I think this is a good one. Yome Sanabi Vadatapta Hrida Tatena. Lipta Bishapam Apamarshatam Upajahara. Try it again. Lipta bishapam apamarshtum apajahara. Jitvarksha rajam ataratnam adatsatena. Vita pita dishatamam prabhave pidatam. Shri Satchabhama Vacha Yome Sanabi Vadatapta Hrida Tatena Lipta Bishapam Apamarshtum Apajahara Jitvarksha Rajam Ataratnam Adatsatena Pita Pita Dishata Mam Prabhave Pitatam Sri Satchabhama Vacha Yome Sanabi Vadatapta Hrida Tatena Lipta Bishapam Apamarshtum Apajahara Jitvarksha Rajam Ataratnam Adatsatena Vita Pita Dishata Mam Prabhave Pidatam Shatamam Prabhave Pidatam
Shri Satchabhama Vacha.
Vaishnavis? Shri Satyabhama Vacha. Shri Satyabhama said, Ya Hu May My Sanabi of my brother Vadha by the killing Tapta distressed Rida whose heart Tatena by my father Lipta tainted Abhishapam with condemnation Apamarshtum to cleanse away Upajahara he removed Jitva after defeating Riksharajam the king of the bears Jambavan Atta then Ratnam, the jewel Shamataka, Adat, gave, Sa, he, Tena, because of this, Bita, afraid, Pita, my father, Adishita, offered, Mam, me, Prabhave, to the Lord, Api, although, the Tom already given. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sri Satyabhama said, My father, his heart tormented by my brother's murder, blamed Lord Krishna for the crime. To remove the stain of his reputation, the Lord defeated the king of the bears and took back the Shamataka jewel, which he then returned to my father. Fearing the consequences of his offense, my father offered me to the Lord, even though I had already been promised to others. Report. As described in chapter 56 of this canto, King Satyajit had already compromised himself by promising his daughter's hand first to Akura and then again to a number of other suitors. But after the return of the Shamataka jewel, he felt impelled by his shame to offer her to Lord Krishna instead. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word Prabhave, unto the Lord, answers any doubt as the propriety of offering Krishna a bride who had already been promised to others. It is perfectly proper to offer him everything one owns and improper to withhold anything from him. So we'll also cover text 10, so we'll not be out of sequence. I think we'll just do the English. Very difficult verses. Translation. Sri Jambavati said, unaware that Lord Krishna was none other than his own master and worshipable deity, the husband of goddess Sita, my father fought with him for 27 days. When my father finally came to his senses and recognized the Lord, he took hold of his feet and presented him with both me and the Shamataka jewel as tokens of his reverence. I am simply the Lord's maidservant. Report. Jambavan had been Lord Ramachandra's servant many thousands of years before. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that while hearing Jambavati's story, the women present recognized her as the girl whom Jambavan had once offered to Lord Sri Ram to be his wife. Since Lord Ram had taken a vow to have only one wife, he could not accept her then, but did so when he returned in the Dwapara Yuga as Krishna. The other queens wanted to honor Jambavati for this, but she replied humbly, "I am just the Lord's maidservant." Now Jambavati and Satyabhama became Lord Krishna's wife is told in chapter 56 of the 10th canto. Om Gyanatim Randisha Janajana Salakaya Chakshun Mitamina Tasma Sri Gavinamaha Panchakopa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhavyebhicha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is a very interesting chapter. The Draupadi and some of the other women from that side of the family have met with Krishna and his family from Dwarka. And of course, this included all of Krishna's principal queens, or I guess all of his queens were there. And so Draupadi and the others are asking questions of the queens. And they're very curious as to how they became queens of Krishna. So this is what we're just yesterday, or the verse before. Rukmini describes her story of being kidnapped and that whole story with Shishupal, like that. And now we hear the stories of Satyabhama and of Jambavati. Besides the just the interesting stories here, because there's several, I think, good, you know, themes that we should note in these verses. First of all, we see this great devotion of the wives of Krishna. We see what great pure devotees that they are. We also see examples of the appreciation of other devotees, as Draupadi and the other women are appreciating Krishna's wives and their great devotional service. I think in this text 10 of Jambavati, it's quite interesting that we're seeing Jambavati's eternal devotion to Krishna that spanned thousands and tens of thousands of years. And finally, we're seeing an example of the great humility of a devotee and how Jambavati responds to the queen. So those are some of the things to talk about today. The story of course, from chapter 56 of Satyabhama and Jambavati all revolves around the Shambhataka jewel. It's a very long story, very intricate story. In fact, I would say of all the Bhagavatam stories, it has the most intrigue, doesn't it? And, you know, like twists of the plot and, you know, all these different things. You know, so I'm not going to go through the whole story. It's we've covered it a few months ago in chapter 56. But briefly, Satyajit is Satyabhama's father. He is a great devotee of the sun god. He's been given the gift of this incredible Shambhataka jewel by the sun god, which not only has this blazing effulgence, but also produces gold every day. So it's very, very valuable. Krishna asks, when he comes into Dwarka, Krishna asks him to give it to the king, Ugrasena. He said, well, you should give it to the king, part of the treasury. He refuses. He won't do that. So that's the first part. Then he gives it to his brother. His brother takes off on a ride in the country. A lion kills his brother. This is only the beginning. And then the lion somehow goes to the cave where Jambavan, who I thought 40 years ago was a monkey, now we learn that he's a bear, right? He's the king of the... So there were both bears and monkeys that were part of Lord Ramachandra's army, right? So anyway, I guess apparently Jambavan is the lord of the bears. He's not an ape. But did some of you older devotees think that? Yeah, we didn't we? Yeah, okay, just confirm this. It wasn't just me. So Jambavan is a bear, apparently. And at any rate, so then Krishna is accused of stealing the Shambhataka jewel by Satyajit. So to save his reputation, he goes off and he brings the citizens of Dwarka with him. They find the brother was killed. So they sort of see, they can trace what's happening, and they follow the trail back to the cave. Krishna says, you better wait out here. He goes into the cave, finds the jewel. They'll take it. The child is playing with the jewel. Jambavan simply gave the jewel. He didn't even care. He just gave it to the child to play with. And so Krishna wants to take the jewel. Jambavan comes in, and Jambavan is a tremendously strong, great warrior who had fought with Lord Ramachandra against Ravana. And so it's described in chapter 56 that Jambavan really hadn't had any competition for a long time, and Krishna didn't have any real competition. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur even says that he had these puny, you know, fights with Shishupala and Jarasandha and Kamsa, so they were nothing for him. Jambavan was a real, you know, someone he could really have fun with. So they fought for 27 days. very, very almost evenly matched. And Jamavan finally realized there's nobody stronger than me except the Lord. You know, he was defeating him. Finally, Jambavan was exhausted, his muscle, you know, he was completely beaten. And he realized, this is my same Lord Ramachandra, who's come as Krishna. So he surrenders to Krishna, he offers immediately the Shamataka jewel to him, and he also offers his daughter, Jambavati. And of course, Jambavati had wanted to marry Lord Ramachandra, but Lord Ramachandra, because of his vow of only having one wife, had to refuse. So many, many tens of thousands of years later, Jambavan is able to again offer his daughter, and Jambavati is very happy to be married to Krishna. So that's the story. And so it's interesting that Draupadi and the others, they're talking to the wives about their stories. How did you end up with Krishna? And so they're hearing these wonderful stories of the Shamataka jewel and fighting with Jambavan and all of these things with great appreciation. You know, they're not envious. It's not that all that the other women are envious. Oh, you got to be Krishna's wives and we didn't somehow. Or, you know, they're so much just happy to hear about the pastimes with Krishna. And you can see, just like with devotees, you know, we like to hear how devotees came to Krishna consciousness. You know, if they were like, they met Prabhupada or they had different adventure, you know, whatever it was, how you came to Krishna consciousness. Devotees like to hear the pastimes of other devotees as it pertains to devotional service and coming to Krishna. So in the same way, Draupadi is appreciating these wonderful stories by the queens of Dwarka. And of course, the devotee is nirmatsara, non-envious. We never envy another's service. They're pleased to hear these stories. They're pleased to see how they were blessed by Krishna, how they received these wonderful benedictions of being Krishna's wives. Because when a devotee is serving nicely, the devotee appreciates that. When we see another devotee serving, we know they are pleasing Krishna and their guru. And we want to see our guru and Krishna pleased. So naturally, we're happy to see how that service is giving pleasure to Krishna. So we never feel envious, even if a devotee seems to be, we may see so many devotees are doing so much more service than me. You know, there's so many exalted devotees, they're more advanced, they're doing so many more things. We're happy for them. We like to see that. And we just feel like, well, I should try to do more myself. I should try to emulate and serve that great devotee who is doing so much service. So that's the mood of the devotee. So the wives also reveal their great devotion to Krishna. They're Satyabhama, it says, you know, how she had been promised to others, but, you know, then she was given to Krishna, and it's explained that this is perfectly acceptable, even though in normal course of things it would be considered to be sort of a breach of etiquette. You know, Satya did promise his daughter to many different people, and then especially Akrura, who also plays a part in the story of the Shamataka jewel, which we won't get into so much, but Akrura is snubbed, you know, and that later leads to the demise of Satyajit. But at any rate, Satyabhama is very, very, very happy to go with Krishna. And similarly, Jambavati. These are great devotees. Not only, of course, are they great devotees just in their own right, as we can see by their behavior and their devotion, but we even know that they are eternally great devotees. The principal queens of Dwarka are basically expansions of the principal gopis in Vrindavan. And the one source I could find is it Lalita Madhava by Rupa Goswami? Is that the right book? That he explains that actually Satyabhama is an expansion of Radharani, and Jambavati is an expansion of Lalita. So actually Rukmini is an expansion of Chandravali, Radharani's sister. This is another thing I always thought for about 40 years, that Rukmini was the direct expansion of Radharani. I don't know, we always thought that for some reason, but actually it turns out, at least according to some of these more recent literatures, that this is actually, it's coming from Shivaram Swami's book, I forget the second one in that series. What is it, Krishna Shara, that's my source on this, I assume. So that's where I got this, that at any rate, because, you know, we remember that Satyabhama has kind of a fiery temper, right? I mean, she's kind of a, you know, she has that, like Radharani. Radharani would become offended, and Radharani, you know, and Krishna really liked this, of course, this this play back and forth that he had with Radharani. So that was also, there was Satyabhama, where Rukmini was actually a much more mild personality as Chandravali was. Remember when he was teasing Rukmini and saying, actually, I'm not suitable, you should get a new husband. Now, see, Radharani would have just gotten angry or something, but Rukmini, she was very different. She just became devastated, right? She was just became overwhelmed with sadness and, oh, you know, what have I done? And like this. So it's kind of just, this is just sort of a side note, but the fact is that, you know, these are obviously these are the greatest examples of devotees that we have in, you know, the entire spiritual creation. You know, this is, we're talking about Radharani and Lalita here. So anyway, they're very, very great devotees. Jambavati's history is interesting because apparently she's, now how much later did Krishna appear after Lord Ramachandra? How many hundreds of thousands of years, aren't we? How much is it? 2 million? 2 million. So I'm assuming these are the same Jambavan and Jambavati. I mean, apparently, I don't think it's a different incarnation because it says it's Jambavan and, you know, she's right there. So they've waited 2 million years. Basically, you know, to get the opportunity for their Lord Ramachandra to come back as Krishna and have that wonderful interaction that's so pleasing to them. Jambavan is, of course, in this, that chivalry, heroic, you know, rasa, you know, liking to fight and having that relationship. And of course, Jambavati got the opportunity to become the wife of Krishna. So her desires were fulfilled also. And this is an incredible example of devotion. You know, just wait 2 million years, you know, to get Krishna. I mean, most of it, we can wait about, you know, 10 minutes, you know, to be anything. I remember when we were new devotees, as I said before, we often thought that, you know, we didn't know too much about Krishna consciousness, so we thought it was really wonderful, and we saw Prabhupada was a pure devotee, and we were promised that, you know, this is a process of purification, we'll all become, so we thought, well, maybe it's going to take us 5 years, you know, to become pure devotees, you know. Well, you know, we had very, very limited, you know, time reference. And here we see Jambavati waits 2 million years to get Krishna. So that's a real devotee. So it's very amazing. And then, and interestingly, Draupadi and the other ladies, somehow it doesn't say how, but they recognize this. They know this is that same Jambavati who was, you know, wanted to marry Lord Ramachandra. And so they're very, very appreciative. They understood, just as we're talking about, they understood how, what a wonderful thing this is. And so they're actually praising her. And they're like, so, you know, like, you know, Jambavati, you're a fantastic devotee, Jambavati. And so that's why it's explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. That's why this last sentence in this verse, why she says, I am simply the Lord's maidservant. In other words, because she was being praised by the other women for this devotion, she was taking a very humble position, saying, I'm just the maid's, Lord's maid servant. So this is a wonderful quality, and I thought we could talk about that for a few minutes. This quality of humility is what exemplifies great devotees. We see this over and over again, that the greatest devotee does not consider themselves to be great personalities. I'm such a great devotee. I'm doing so much service. But they actually take the most humble position. So this humility is exhibited over and over by the great devotees of the Lord. And we can see so many examples all the way from Srila Prabhupada back to the characters and personalities of Chaitanya Leela and, of course, Krishna Leela. So a devotee is humble. Why is a devotee humble? Well, first of all, they're unconcerned with material opulence. They understand that everything is temporary. If they have, there's nothing to be proud of, really. There's no material thing to have a lot of pride in because it's a very temporary thing. We're granted something in this particular lifetime, in this body, and any qualities that we have, you know, is simply pertaining to this body and not something to be that proud of. And secondly, we see that there's a spiritual equality of all living beings. Why should we feel that we are superior to anyone else when all of us are equal as living entities? And thirdly, we see ourselves as insignificant when we compare ourselves to the greatness of Krishna. So all we have to do is understand the qualities of Krishna, and how can we not be humble? How can we think we're anything you know, compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, this humility is a very, very important quality of Bodhi. It's listed first in the qualities of Bodhi in Bhagavad Gita 13.8. And Srila Prabhupada talks about in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 13.8, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others, but from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. So most of our pride has to do with our bodily, either physical or mental, intellectual accomplishments. And so if we understand that none of these things are a permanent position, that we are the spirit soul that is temporarily inhabiting the body, that temporarily is taken on the subtle body, then we don't become so proud or puffed up. You know, we've gotten a certain body due to some past activities, and we'll get a different body in another lifetime. Not so much concern. And we also see, as I said, that everyone is equal. There is no reason to feel inferior or superior to anyone else. Bhagavad Gita 5.18 says, "The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater." Srila Prabhupada says in that purport, "A Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or caste." That's interesting. Not only between different classifications of humans, but even between different species of animals or plants. We shouldn't see a distinction. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, and an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to the relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. So that brings up another point. We see spiritual equality of the spiritual spark, the Atma, the Jiva, within every living entity, and we also see, at least intellectually we see, that Paramatma is also there within the heart of every living entity. So not only is there the spiritual equality of all souls, but Krishna is residing in the heart of every living entity as the super soul, Paramatma. Therefore, that's why we offer respect to all living entities, because Krishna is there within every one of them. And finally, the natural position of the devotee is to feel humble, because we understand that Krishna is very great and we are very small. It probably gives all these, you know, so many analogies, and these same analogies are there in the scriptures of how Krishna is like the ocean and we're like a drop of water in the ocean, or Krishna is like, you know, all the rays of the sun, and we're simply a spark in the fire, that kind of thing. So we understand we may be qualitatively the same as Krishna, but quantitatively we are very small, Krishna is very great. Therefore, what is there to become puffed up about? And Hari Bhakti Vilas says the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of things favorable, rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full surrender, and humility. So humility is part and parcel of the process of surrendering to the Lord. And we may sometimes struggle with that because it can be difficult. Humility is our natural position as a spirit soul, but is not our natural position in this material world. From the perspective of material consciousness, it's foreign to us. People don't want to take the humble position. We tend to develop false pride when we come into this material world. And of course, we know that, you know, the first contact when the living entity enters the Mahatattva, the first development is ahankara, is false ego. The false ego immediately develops, because without false ego, how could you exist in this material world? The false ego tells us that, you know, I am this body and mind. I'm not spirit soul. It covers the real nature, our knowledge of the soul, our knowledge of self. And everything I possess is mine. So this idea of me and mine, which is inherent within the concept of ahankara, is there immediately as soon as the living entity contacts this material energy. So once that ahankara, false ego, is developed, then naturally false pride develops. Prabhupada quoted, I think it's an English saying, that every pauper is proud of his penny, right? In other words, if you're very poor and you have a penny, I have a penny. Penny isn't worth anything anymore. It used to be worth something. But it's like that. We have some little thing, we have some little quality, and we're proud of that. And hang on to that like it's something special. But the reality is, as we were saying, that all of these things are temporary, and they're not our real nature. They're not of real importance. Now, a devotee, at least my feeling is that it's not bad to be proud of being a devotee, to be proud of our spiritual master, to be proud of Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. We take some pride in that, but it's not pride for ourselves. It's pride in service. It's really that we feel gratitude and pride that we are in this movement of Krishna consciousness, and somehow or another we've been accepted by our guru and accepted by Krishna to do a little bit of devotional service. So it's not that we exactly feel pride, that may not be the right word, but we do, it's not that it's nothing. We take it as important. It is something substantial. We don't dismiss spiritual qualities and our spiritual relationships with the Lord and Guru. But as far as all material relationships and material qualities, we're very careful not to become too enamored with them. Yeah. And sometimes, because we tend to develop this pride so easily in the material world, even as devotees, and Krishna has to sometimes curb that. And that happens. And we have stories of that are very instructive for us, such as Indra. Indra's, of course, we always pick on Indra. He's sort of our poster boy for false pride and getting you know, a little slap by Krishna, right? It happens to him on several occasions. Most notably, of course, is during the Govardhan Puja and the whole incident where he tries to devastate Vrindavan with floods, and of course he finally comes to his senses, realizing that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he's created a great offense to him and his devotees. So after all of that's done and he goes to Krishna in great humility, Indra says, this is from Krishna book, page 226, "Within this material world there are many fools like myself who consider themselves to be the Supreme Lord or the all in all within the universes. You are so merciful that without punishing their offenses, you devise means so that their false prestige is subdued, and they can know that you and no one else are the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So Indra clearly got the message, at least then, and he was saying, of course, now if you're Indra, you might have some reason to be proud. I mean, he's controlling the universes, charge of the rain, thunderbolts, you know. I mean, he has actually a little bit to be proud of, you know, and even he sees this as false pride. And that Krishna completely destroyed it, completely devastated it, and he brought him to his senses of understanding his real position as simply a humble servant. So what to speak of us? Certainly we should see that our little abilities or qualities are quite insignificant. So this concept of humility, of course, is not always popular. Sometimes people think of, well, if I'm humble, that means I have low self-esteem or whatever, I don't think much of myself. This is sort of a psychological issue, but it's not the spiritual position. The spiritual position is that humility is based upon our natural relationship to God. We are humble because we understand our relationship with God. It's not because we think that we are worthless or lowly or anything like that. It's just our natural position. It's who we are. And because we do feel humble in the greatness of God. And that's based upon our spiritual situation. And once we understand that, it's almost, for the materialist, it's almost counterintuitive. You know, it's like to say that, you know, the only way to become free from the material world, become free from the modes of nature, is to surrender, right? To surrender to Krishna. So it's like, it's almost counterintuitive to them. In other words, to become free, you have to surrender. Well, how can that be? How is that being free? Because it's being free from the material energy. When we surrender to Krishna, we're fully protected by the spiritual energy, and we're free from the influences of the material energy. And that position brings our real happiness. It brings peace. It brings satisfaction to the devotees. So when the devotee is situated in our eternal constitutional position of servant of Krishna, we're happy. We're satisfied. It's who we are. And that isn't, and also it needs to be, of course, devotees understand this, but being servant of Krishna is not like being servant in the material world. In the material world, being a servant is also not a good thing, right? It means you're put down, you get treated badly, you get paid badly, you have to serve somebody who's just some arrogant rich person or whatever. It's not like that. To be servant of Krishna, how does Krishna feel about his servants? Krishna reciprocates with them. Krishna reciprocates with wonderful, loving dealings. Krishna wants to serve his devotees. Right? It's not. Why did Krishna go to fight Jambavan? Because Jambavan wanted to fight with him, right? That was his relationship. And Krishna also wanted to himself. So it's a reciprocation. To us, we may not quite understand it if you're not in that chivalrous mood, you know, but that was the loving relationship. And marrying the queens. This is his loving relationship. You know, there is reciprocation, there's reciprocity, there is love, there is an exchange, there's rasa. This is all in the spiritual world. We don't experience this so much in the material world. So we have to understand that this is our constitutional position, and these stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam and these wonderful personalities that we're hearing about are exemplifying the mood of pure devotional service and giving us an idea of what that relationship can be like. Now, it may take us a little time to come to that position or that platform, but at least we understand the goal of pure devotional service that is there, is given to us by these great devotees in the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. We have a few minutes. Is there any comments or questions? Anibu?
It might be debatable whether Jambavan and Jambavati stayed in the material world that 2 million years.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, they're Nitya Siddhas, right? So it seems, I mean, I'd say it's debatable. I don't really know. Do you know the answer?
Do we have more insight on the whether... what happened during the 2 million years between...
Sanatana Goswami Pad in Dasani Tipani talks about it. He says that just like the coward was, Krishna left to search out for the cows. For 1 year, it appears, 1 year to our calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And when Krishna came back, he didn't see any coward boy. So Brahmaji stole for 1 year, according to Sukhdev Goswami's explanation from our side. Mm-hmm. But when Krishna again met them, they said, oh, you came so quick, you just went and came.
Yeah.
It was like a moment, it was not 1 year at all.
Mm-hmm.
So similar way, Sanatana Goswami Pad says, that there, Jambavati, first of all, Jambavati, when Lalita Sakhi was in a deep separation feeling from Krishna for Radharani, that she expended a form of austerity, that is actually Jambavati.
Mm.
So that Jambavati was raised by this king of bear, and her trance in Krishna, separation from Krishna, it's so intense, it like a whole 2 million or 5 million, whatever the year, that's for our calculation. But for her, she's never actually separated in the sense. Because that separation keeps the love alive.
Yeah.
The feeling for her, for Krishna, alive always. So that's like a moment. is not.
What you're saying? So this is the same Jambavati, but it didn't feel like 2 million years for them. It passed just momentarily.
But from our angle, it's
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That was good. Okay, let's
just
not get too much lost in the details here.
I was just showing you in Treta Yoga, it's 1,296,000
Yeah.
And Dwarpa is 864,000
Yeah.
That's how we get
it's 2 million. 2 million. Right.
But we would say almost 2 million. You know,
right, because it's just the end of Dwarpa, just almost near the beginning of Kali Yuga. Yeah.
Also, it seems like for these devotees, though time doesn't affect their lifestyle, like, you know.
Apparently.
Yeah, you know, like how it affects us, really.
Yeah.
Time doesn't really. Like, for example, Parshuram was also in Lord Ramachandra's Leela.
Yeah.
But he was in Krishna Leela, and he fought with Bhishma and everything, and he was invincible. And he still existed, of course.
And Madhvacharya, at about 1000 AD, went to the Himalayas and met Vyasadeva.
Yeah.
It was, you know, so 5,000 years
so
before.
So time doesn't really affect these exalted devotees.
Yeah, we can't really apply material time and space so much in devotional service. I think there was one other question on the lady side.
It's actually not a question, it's a comment. It's what you were saying about pride. Mm. At one point, you described pride in Krishna consciousness movement and everything. You said it may not be the right word. But one time when Prabhupada came to Honolulu, I was in the listening audience, and he had been discussing pride, and then he could only have been referring to himself, and he said, "But to be proud of being the most confidential servitor of Krishna.
Okay.
That is spiritual." And I remember being startled and kind of sitting up, and he said the same thing again. So I just wanted to add.
Thank
that.
You for the confirmation. That's what I was trying to say. Spiritual pride is not the same as material pride. Was there anything else? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Krishna.